The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Good evening. You are listening to the newly rebranded Fire Breslow podcast by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am your host, Chris Felico, the Italian Stallion, joined by Jeremy Schilling, the Irish Goodbye, and Maddie Holmes. I believe it was Maddie Massacre Holmes, in which, in typical fashion, the Red Sox, who seemingly were handed a gift from the baseball gods after sweeping the New York Yankees at Fenway Park, a place that has been a house of horrors for them this season, then drop 2 of 3 to the Washington Nationals. And boys, that's where I want to start here, is if I would have told you going into a 10-game stretch in which 4 were going to be against the New York Yankees, 3 of them against the Washington Nationals, and then 3 against the lowly Los Angeles / Anaheim Angels, what do you think this team would have finished over that 10-game stretch?
Yeah, I delusionally thought that the sweep of the Yankees was because of the way the Red Sox were playing. More on that in a second. So I thought that they would just win both of the remaining series before the All-Star break and, you know, probably go 8-2, 7-3. I mean, it was set up to do that. They still technically could. If they go out and sweep, they'd finish 8-2. So it's still possible. But I thought that they would win both series because the way we had been pitching just felt like they were ready to really kind of go on a little heater. It probably still wouldn't have been enough. But the Yankees sweep was more about the Yankees playing absolutely god-awful baseball and the complete inability to hit because their lineup is devastated by injuries than anything we did, in my opinion. And so that's where my delusion was as they won that game and extras down 2 in the 10th.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I was bought in and thinking that we were all of a sudden playoff contenders. I mentioned the other day that sweeping the Yankees is always good for the Sox, no matter how we are in the standings or the time of the year. But it was just, obviously the Yankees went on to lose 3 in a row, and we went right back to being the Red Sox that we've been all year long. And it's just frustrating. Once again, another tough series. And I actually think back one series before that where that we lost 2 out of 3 to the Rockies. It was like we won 2 out of 3 in Seattle against a tough ball club. And then we could have won 2 out of 3, potentially swept the Rockies. Mayer makes an error. Chapman, I think, blew a save in that one too. Then you roll into the Yankee series, which you swept. And then you have a chance to beat a struggling Nationals team that albeit has a good offense and they match up kind of tough against you. You know, we have good pitching. They have good offense. But yeah, they just keep shooting themselves in the foot. It's been frustrating season all year long. And again, I wasn't all bought in on the winning streak there, but it was certainly nice to see the Red Sox get some wins. I mean, we haven't even hit July 4th yet, and we're already talking sell the team and everything. So I'll always take some wins when we can get them. But again, we'll get into some of the ways they've been shooting themselves in the foot. They're just a flawed baseball team. And you know, Chris, to your specific question, right, I would have said 8-2, and I guess you're right, Jeremy, they could technically still go 8-2, but it's not in the manner in which we thought they could, right? They were in both those games, the first 2 games of the National Series, and then yesterday really just got away from them. Tough stint for the bullpen and the pitchers there, but yeah, they just are a flawed baseball team. And the interesting thing was they had 12 straight quality starts. I mean, that's elite. The pitching was so elite during that stretch, and we don't have much to show for it, right? We're still sitting 6 games back. We leapfrogged 2 teams, so now we're the 12th best team in the AL instead of the 15th best team. It's just been an odd season. I mean, even our run differential, we're like 2nd or 3rd in run differential, which obviously doesn't mean anything because we're 10 games below 500, but just a wacky season and frustrating because I feel like the past few seasons we've had a team that has really struggled with their pitching. but has been able to score runs. And they actually put up better records than this team has heading into the All-Star game and the trade deadline, right? And then this year we have elite pitching, but man, the offense is just horrible lately. So, you know, the frustrating season continues.
Yeah, I would have said the same thing. I think at minimum they would have had to go 8-2. And it's funny because yes, they still technically can go 8-2. But even if they sweep the Los Angeles Angels, it has such a different level of context and like feeling and sentiment if they go 8-2 after losing 2 of 3 to the Nationals. Because then you start thinking, well, crap, we should have at least gotten 9-1. Hell, we could have even potentially went 10-0 if we go out there and sweep the Angels, right? And, you know, I wasn't quote-unquote buying the Red Sox. Anytime you beat the New York Yankees, it's a good thing. It's hard to, like, even though I've been in, like, lose-every-game mode, I can't stand the Yankees. I don't want to watch the Yankees win. But it is tough to also judge those wins, no pun intended, without Aaron Judge playing in those games. Because, I mean, the Yankees are just clearly not the same team. They're not the same offense without Aaron Judge. That is obvious after watching a 4-game sweep. I mean, the little bit of life they showed, we still come back and win an extra innings in shocking fashion. And that was all good. I think for me, this has kind of been the story of the Red Sox, right? Is that anytime we start to see a little bit of traction for this team, you're like, okay, we can build on this. There's always a setback. And that setback always feels like 2 steps backwards from the 1 step forward that you took, which is inevitably still 1 step further than you started. For me, the only way I really would have think I would have started to buy into this is if they would have come out of this 10-game stretch at minimum 2.5 games out of a wild card, right? Because I think 2.5 is a much different tone than right now. We're 6 games back, so I guess theoretically, if we sweep and then other series go our way, we could be 3 games back. But still, even with the way that the Red Sox have been playing, 3 games seems monumental. And then if you want to take it a step further, 3 games back of the 3rd wild card, even if you get that position, like, are you really going to climb to the 2nd wild card? Probably not. And what does the 3rd wild card really mean to a team like the Boston Red Sox? We had the 2nd wild card last year and went down in pathetic fashion to the New York Yankees after taking the 1st game of that series. If we were to get the 3rd wild card, we're going to more than likely get swept right out of the gate against whoever is the best freaking team. You're shaking your head, Jeremy. You disagree?
All you need is a chip in the chair in the playoffs and a hot pitcher, man. And it's not only about the playoff series. It's about meaningful baseball through September. Meaningful games that put your ass in the recliner every night, interested in the team. And then if you do get in the playoffs, you are it's like a game of poker, man. Chip in a chair and you got a shot. You got a staff here that can go out and on any given night give you 7 innings of 0-1-run baseball. And yeah, the offense blows, and yeah, they probably won't win, but playoff baseball is you know, you can get hot and win a series, and then you just never know. There's an upset on the other side, and all of a sudden the matchup's better than you think, or, you know, just the idea of having meaningful baseball throughout the summer is so enticing to me. This isn't like the NFL where if you're tanking, you really need to tank and get to 3-4 wins and go get the number one seed because you could get a player altering a player that alters the trajectory of your franchise. Being in last place doesn't do you anything. I mean, you could take the number one overall pick, and even if he's a good player, he's 4 or 5 years away. There's no reason to tank. So for at least with baseball, I want to see meaningful games, man.
I don't disagree. I think to your first point in that is that all it takes is a hot pitcher. Well, that was going to bring me to my next point. We have pitchers dropping all over the place.
We sure do, so, pal.
Having a hot pitcher seems like a pretty tall ask at this point for this team, Jeremy. And I don't disagree with you. It would be great to see meaningful baseball. What scares me about that, especially with a lockout more than likely looming, meaningful baseball and another playoff quote-unquote appearance for this team almost solidifies another year of Craig Breslow coming out of what looks like is going to be a lockout. And for me, that, like, I can't do it. I can't, because that's 2 more years of bullcrap. One of them will be with no baseball, which will, on one hand, make me sad because there's no baseball, but then make me happy because I don't have to watch this baseball team. But then we're going to have to come right back to watching what you're doing right now. And that is a guy who is the vice president of baseball operations doing a job that he is way in over his head in. And I just don't know if I could do it, Jeremy. I really don't. I get everything you're saying, but I want to do everything that we can as a team to get us further and further away from Craig Breslow.
Yeah, it feels like the movie Major League, right? That's what we're living through right now. I feel like the disgruntled fans from that movie. I mean, you're absolutely right, Jeremy. All a baseball fan wants is competitive games through September, right? Flirt with the playoffs, give you something to root for and cheer for all summer long. When the Sox are just, you know, 10 games under 500 and 6 games back before July 3rd. And man, it just takes all the wind out of the sails of the summer, especially up here in the Northeast. You don't know anything about it, Jeremy. We only get nice weather half the year. So, but it's the Sox have been spoiling it. Craig Breslow has certainly been spoiling it. But Chris, I got news for you. I don't think he's going anywhere, at least this summer, unfortunately. So, you know, we're going to have to find a way to work through this pain with you, because I don't think Craig's going anywhere unless that disaster situation, which you just said, and they just completely tank, end up losing 100 games. Then there's really no way around it. Then it's absolutely certified that he's done. And I think the only way you actually lose 100 games, because I think this is a weird team where they'll flirt around another, you know, spurt or two later in the summer, and they'll finish around 70 something wins. It won't be meaningful and flirting with a playoff spot, but it'll be just enough where Craig will have something to hang on to. And unless they're firing Sam Kennedy, it really doesn't make a difference, because we're not going to get anybody good to replace him anyways.
You ended on a really good point. I think that the for the group of people that say tank to get rid of Craig Breslow, I think the embarrassment so far suffered in this season, regardless of what happens the balance of the summer, is enough to move on from him. It's a complete disaster. It's embarrassing. And the movie Major League and the season and the first iteration of that movie is so appropriate. Most of these guys are not even big leaguers, you know, and it's just a rudderless ship. So that's a really good analogy. But I think if they go play over 10 games over 500 and get in the playoffs at like 83 and 81 or 84 and 80, I don't think it undoes what's clearly in front of everybody, which is Craig Breslow's way in over his head. And for a team that thought they were going to ascend and discussions about being a 90 plus win team, they're not going to get there no matter what happens. They'd have to be like historically good the rest of the way. And that is not going to happen. So I get both sides of it. I'd rather have a game to turn on September 15th that I give a blank about than say, oh, good, we're 25 games under 500 and Breslow's fired. I don't know. I care too much. It's a game that's in front of you every day. In a bad football season, you can kind of grin and bear it on Sunday and deal with it. But baseball's just, it's on every single night. You got to, you know, to not have the games is soul crushing. But to your point, Chris, the two steps back for every step forward, what was lost in that brawl, if you even want to call it that, is Connelly Early has an elbow problem and has to leave the game. So guess what that probably means, everybody? Brian Bejo's coming back. I don't see any other way. I haven't heard anything about Cutter Crawford. I haven't heard anything about Tanner Houck. Unless they're going to go with somebody else that we haven't really heard of, I think it's the Brian Bejo return to Boston. And he hasn't been particularly dominant in AAA. Last time I checked, he was a negative 0.3 WAR. And I guess he pitched okay, 5 innings, 3 runs in his last start. But he ain't lighting the world on fire down there. So that's the most alarming thing. For any number of reasons, including if you were thinking about involving Connelly Early in some sort of trade package to maybe go get an impact player like a Yordan Alvarez, he's now not available potentially to move. So it's a problem. I also mentioned this earlier in the year. I think Charlie brought up the topic of Toley versus Early. Who would you keep? And while Toley's more of a thrower and Early's more of a pitcher, I did comment on Early's size, and I'm not taking a victory lap. Like, I wasn't right about anything. I just mentioned that Connelly Early's body frame kind of concern me. He does have very smooth mechanics. He's very technically sound in his delivery. He's not overextending, but his slight size did concern me with potential injury history compared to Toley, who's built like he should be playing middle linebacker for the Patriots. So just out of the blue, nowhere, there's been no issues, and all of a sudden, bang, in the fourth inning of a game against the Nationals in late June, he comes up with, and they haven't said what's going on in his elbow. Is it like Scooble and it's loose bodies and you can go in there and clean it up and he's back in a month? Is it Tommy something that I won't say the full name of because I don't want to jinx it? But like that's concerning. When you go right to the elbow, that's a problem.
Whatever it is, it's 60 days. Anytime you hit the IL on the Red Sox, it's 60 days. They're going to tell you it's not a big deal, and then we don't see you for 2 months. It's witness protection.
Start, right, Matt?
It's the witness protection program when you're on the IL for our team. But, yeah, that's the scary part is we're maybe looking at Brian Bayo. Terry mentioned the other night Patrick Sandoval is apparently close to coming home or coming back to the team or making his Red Sox debut. Another guy that's just been on the IL forever so long, I forgot we even had him.
Who? I missed the name.
Patrick Sandoval.
Oh.
Yeah. One of Craig's classic injured arm signings. He's ready to pitch a year and a half after getting picked up. But, yeah, it's just I'm concerned about Early. Hopefully it's not a big deal. But from just a fan perspective, a big fan of Early. And, you know, I'm rooting for him. We, like you said, we were right in that game. He was cruising to that 13th straight quality start. And then all of a sudden he had some elbow soreness. Then the brawl broke out. And the rest is history. Nobody was even talking about Early the rest of the game because of Wilson's antics. And I know we wanted to chat a little bit about that, not to spoil the transition for you, Chris. But we did hear about his news or his 7-game suspension, him and Cavalli getting equal 7-game bids.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much more for me to comment on the Connelly Early situation. I mean, to your 2 points, Jeremy, about – you know, having a team that makes you want to turn on the TV, a Brian Bayo start is not that for me. So
we agree on that, pal.
We'll skip right over that. So if it is Brian Bayo who comes up for Connelly Early, then, you know, God willing, I have no interest in watching that at all. So good luck to the Boston Red Sox. As far as Wilson Contreras, yes. And this has been a common theme for this season. Wilson Contreras, you know, who's been known to be somewhat of a hothead, to say the least, has now had these moments where he's getting into it with starting pitcher of the opposing team. Even earlier, I think in game one of the series, he was going chirping back and forth. I don't remember if he was thrown out of that game, but he was thrown out of this one for the brawl, and he has been suspended, I believe it was 7 games. And I mean, let's face it, he has been the catalyst for any offensive outpouring and burst for this team throughout the season. He is usually the bat that is behind it. So obviously not having him is not going to help. Even if you're playing the lowly Angels and the Washington Nationals, in which we learned the hard way, 2 games without Wilson Contreras for the majority of them, we lose both of them in pretty embarrassing fashion. So what are your guys' thoughts of obviously not having Wilson Contreras in the lineup for the next 7 games as we enter a very pivotal month for the Boston Red Sox? Pivotable, yep, new word. Because let's face it, the trade deadline is looming and there's been a plethora of comments that are coming out of the Boston Red Sox organization that is making you, I'm sure, extremely upset, and just leaves looming question marks around this organization.
I mean, the offense is easy to point to. I mean, he's been your most consistent at bat. You know, he has the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, drive the ball into the gap. He's played every day. He's been super durable. And in the game that he got the brawl, which I want to talk about, my interpretation of that whole thing, is that Montesario boots the ball at first base. And in the moment, it dawned on me how automatic he's been over there. He's been excellent. You think he's been good offensively. He's been even better defensively. And right away, a shortstop playing first base boots a ball. And so you're going to see it over, and I don't think it'll end up being 7 games. They're going to do the appeal thing, and it'll be down to 5 or 4 or whatever. But those are going to be tough days to navigate. First of all, we don't have a backup plan, and this is something I hit on all offseason. They refused to address first base because they convinced themselves that Tristan Casas was the first baseman for the next 10 years. He winds up with a durability issue. And by the way, when he plays, he's not very good except for the second half of 2023. And they have no other backup plan in the whole system. So the reason why we even had a first baseman this year is they finally had to go outside the organization and admit that they never had an internal plan for that spot anyways. And guess what? We still don't have a non-Wilson Contreras plan. Tristan Casas isn't coming back anytime soon. There's nobody at first base that's ready to come from Worcester or Portland to play even a small portion of games at first base. So you're going to see Montessario or Wong at first base, and it ain't going to be pretty because Contreras has really been it's the best way. You almost forget that that has been such an issue in the past because he's been so automatic, and it's not just ground balls. It's everything. It's turning a double play where you have a force at second, or you pick a guy off and he steps inside the line and makes a perfect throw to second base, or scoops a ball from, you know, a bad throw or whatever. He's excellent. His footwork around the bag, holding the bag on throws that are perfect. Like, I could go on and on. So those games that he does miss, we're going to feel it. We're really going to feel it. Now, with regards to the player himself, okay, I run out of patience with the fake tough guy act. Like, you want to go charge the mound and set an example that if you throw up and in on me, I'm going to potentially come out and I'm crazy enough to fight you in the middle of the field, then do it. Stop faking it and just do it. Go do it once. Tell the league, if you F with me, I'm going to come out there, I'm going to punch you in the face. All you have to do is it one time and it stops. Okay. Instead, he does this. This is what, the sixth, seventh, eighth time that he's jab stepped towards the pitching mound. And then this one, he finally ignites a brawl. Right. But what does he do? And I, from what I understand of what Cavalli said, he had every right to be like, what is your problem, pal? Who do you think you're talking to? But then he waits for the 17 players to be in between him till he starts making these wild attempts that he knows are never going to land to get to the pitcher. And when it becomes clear and obvious that he's not going to get home, he rifles his helmet into a sea of people. He deserves to be suspended. And it was incredibly stupid. And it did not achieve what I'm talking about, which is if you go out once and you send a message, people stop throwing at you. You didn't even achieve that. So the player has been very good. I'm just kind of over the tough guy act. You know, I just am.
Man, we're out here dropping Tristan Casas. It can't be a good night anytime we're talking about him. To your point, Jeremy, probably going to see some more Romy Gonzalez at first base too now that he's back. But
he's not
still not going to be as good. You're right. Wilson was probably and still probably is in line for a gold glove. Plays an excellent first base, something we haven't seen in a while. You're right. That cost us a couple runs at least. Monasterio got ate up by that ball that, you know, Wilson comes up with that the other day. Look, I thought that seven games was a bit much. Bryce Harper got four games, I believe, for when he came rifling his helmet out in San Francisco, pleaded down to three games. So seven is a bit much, probably to do with Wilson's antics and, I don't know, just classic baseball brawl, which was another word to say a fake fight. But look, let's face it, that's really nine games he's out of because he got ejected from back-to-back games. Now he's getting a seven-game suspension. That's nine games for a guy that, one, is not only our best player but offensively, but two, supposed to be our leader. So this just can't happen. I'm all for, to your point, Jeremy, you know, making a spark, providing the energy, bringing the juice, packing that punch. But you know where you can't help the team is when you're not playing the game. And he has been the only bright spot offensively for us, our only major league bat. Sedan definitely is putting together a nice season, but Wilson's the real, you know, only solid major league hitter that we have. And now we're essentially without him for, it's looking like nine games. You're right. He'll probably appeal that and lose, get back, you know, four or five, but it's just putting ourselves in an even tougher spot. You know, like you said, there's no plan. There's no depth at that position, at either corner position, candidly. Fortunately, Caleb Durbin's been able to figure it out. But, you know, now we're looking at a lineup that when you take Wilson Contreras out of it, on paper, it's basically the Woo Sox. Like, it just doesn't excite you, to your point, Chris, right? What am I going to tune in and watch? Usually I try to find the good in whoever's starting that game. So, yeah, losing early doesn't help that. But offensively, there's really nobody that's worth watching. You're better off just changing the channel when those guys come up, or a quick bathroom break, because it's usually not a long half inning when we're up at the plate. And I think, Jeremy, there's been five benches clearing brawls, which or benches clearing incidents with the Red Sox, which is just way too many for a team that's in last place, 10 games below 500. Wilson seems to be at the center for all of them. This time he didn't even get pitched at or hit inside. He K'd. He got struck out and then a little trash talk, and he couldn't handle it. He's just a little sensitive right now, a lot going on in his home country in Venezuela, but totally agree. I'm over the antics. I like the player. I like the bat, but we're going to be without him for a week here, heading into a tough stretch, which is it's put up or shut up time really for this team, because IKF said it best a week or so ago, if they don't start playing better, it's going to be a different team moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. I'm kind of sick of the antics as well. Like it's one thing, to your point, Jeremy, you want to set the tone and like you want to go out there and pummel someone, then go out there and just like punch the guy. If you're going to get suspended, make it worth your while. Set the tone, do it once. It doesn't need to be once a series, which is what it feels like with this guy at this point. But I'll tell you, one of our fans on here actually did make a good point. I think it's Billy Conran. How does Covelli not get tossed the other night, yet he gets the same 7-game suspension now? And I think that is a fair point, right? Like the pitcher on the Washington Nationals is getting the 17-game suspension that Wilson Contreras did, but yet he was allowed to basically go out there and pitch what seemed like another 5 or 6 innings in that game, and put them in a really good position to win and pretty much stop the Red Sox offense in their tracks that night. And to answer your question, Matt, I think sadly with Wilson Contreras out of the lineup, the next most exciting player in this lineup is sadly probably Caleb Durbin and his little resurgence that he's had the last couple of weeks. Because outside of that, I mean, where are you getting offense from? Yeah, Rafaela gets hot once in a while. Duran,
Abreu's been okay too.
Yeah,
you're literally probably looking at Durbin batting cleanup now. Your point,
it's crazy. Yeah. It's insane at this point. So yeah, it's a shame they got to fix that with Wilson Contreras, because we can't afford not to have him. And the truth of the matter is, it scares the hell out of me to think about the fact that he is probably not the long term answer anyway. Nor do I think he was planned to be, and that we have no backup plan outside of freaking Casas, who I never want to see play in a Red Sox uniform again. So I think that will get us to...
Quick thought on the Cavalli. I thought it was appropriate. He got a 7-gamer. It's basically one start he's missing, you know, one time through the rotation, which I think is typical for a starting pitcher that gets in an altercation like this, right? Typically it hits... They're not going to miss 5 starts. It's just going to miss one time through the rotation, but I was a little surprised. I know he didn't get physical, but I think they actually got it right in the end for the suspension based on his actions. It was really uncalled for. I know sportsmanship and all of that, and he didn't really say anything that bad, but his comments definitely had a lot to do with the brawl. And I'm sure those circumstantial situation between Wilson and all the other Venezuelan players came into consideration with that decision as well.
Absolutely. All right. So we basically now have, what, a 3-game series against the Los Angeles Angels, or is it a 4-game series?
I believe 3. I can verify here.
Let's see. I'm looking too. So I know we've got Gray, Suarez. Who is pitching Saturday?
Jake Bennett must be up soon.
Saturday is Sonny Gray. So it's Bennett.
Okay, it's Bennett, Gray, then Suarez. So you got Bennett versus Detmers. You've got Gray versus Allegheri, and Suarez versus Johnson. All right, so I mean, what seems like a favorable, at least pitching matchup at face value for the Boston Red Sox. Who do you guys have in this 3-game set?
Well, Detmers has comparable numbers to Bennett, 3.88 ERA, 1.06 whip, but he's thrown 3 times the amount of innings. He's at 100 innings. This guy's on pace to maybe throw 200 innings on the year. He's having a pretty good year. 112 Ks in 99 innings, and he's a lefty. He's going to shove on tomorrow, on Friday. So we're going to lose that game, in my opinion. Pitching matchup's a little more favorable with Sonny Gray going. The Angels guy, Allegheri, He's 4.85, doesn't have a ton of innings. So I do think that but again, this is on paper. The thing that I can't account for, what stupid thing is going to happen that causes them to lose a game they should never lose? You know, like, it's so hard. So Suarez, we absolutely should win on Sunday. Suarez, we all know how good he's been. Ryan Johnson, 7.4 ERA in 24 innings, terrible. You know, on paper, if you were to go on that, you'd say they maybe drop the first one, win the back two, win the series, and get to 7-3 in their last 10. I think they lose the series and limp into the All-Star break, because that's just who they are. And it's so tough to predict what they're going to do, because they're going to do something we haven't seen yet or don't expect. You know, you just never know. But they'll lose the series.
You stole a little of my thunder there, Jeremy, right? I think on paper, as with a lot of series that we're heading into, you look, hey, this is a team that we should either at least win the series or potentially sweep. But each and every night we find a new way to shoot ourselves in the foot, a new way to blow it, a new way to give the game away. So from that perspective, maybe from that lens, they're exciting games to watch. Reed Detmer is actually a pretty good pitcher. I really do like what I've been seeing out of Jake Bennett. He's been a young pitcher, really figuring it out in his second stint in the big leagues. But I think it's a tough matchup with the Angels have a good amount of right-handed hitters, I think. I maybe just heard this, that Trout is on the IL, is he not? But they still have Joe Adell, Zach Neto, a couple other righties that with some pop. Vaughn Grissom, we can't forget about him over with the Angels. I will say it right now, he's probably going to hit at least one home run against us, just to remind us, you know, that's just the way the luck has been going for us Red Sox fans. So look out for him to at least put one over the fence and probably still only hit like 100 for the series. But I've got the Sox winning 2 out of 3. I really obviously like what I've seen out of Gray. Ranger Suarez is the real deal. We're missing, we're not going to see the Angels' best pitcher, Soriano, there. So Reed Detmer is probably their second best pitcher. Outside of a low scoring game, that's probably the one they lose, because they seem to always lose the first game of every series, no matter what, which completely eliminates the possibility to sweep a team. And then I actually think they're going to circle back, win the next two games. And we're going to look back on the stretch and say, man, that was the rockiest, most unimpressive 7-3 run I've ever seen out of any Red Sox team. But you know, it's been a wacky year. It's been a wacky American League this year. We've seen it with the Yankees, right? One injury can completely throw a team off the rails. Cleveland with Ramirez going down, now all of a sudden the White Sox are in first place. So, you know, we're not mathematically eliminated, but unfortunately at this point, it's going to take injuries from outside teams and then us have to crawl back and play historically good baseball to get back into it. I think we find some success at LA, though. Battle of the basement team. So not sure how many people will be watching, but I got the Sox going winning 2 out of 3.
You know, if we had Wilson Contreras, I would confidently say that we'd win 2 out of 3. I still do think we are going to win 2 out of 3, only because that's the Red Sox this year, right? Is when you think they're on the upswing, they go and do something dumb, and then you think they're out of it and they get your hopes back up. It would be right on, you know, brand with the Boston Red Sox this year to go out there and win 2 out of 3, get 7-3 out of this 10-game home stretch, which, let's be honest, if we were told that a week ago, that going into a 4-game series with the New York Yankees and then 3-3 against Nationals and the Angels, that you were going to go 7-3, we would have taken it in a heartbeat. But yet after sweeping the Yankees, it would be such a disappointment to only get 7-3. And I think we will, but at the end of the day, I mean, they don't have Trout. There's no one really in the Angels that scares me, but there was no one that scared me on the Nationals. So if you told me the Red Sox lose 2 out of 3, I wouldn't be shocked at this point either. So I will take the Red Sox to win 2 out of 3. Do not put a gun to my head, because it could go either way, folks, at this point. You boys have anything else to say?
I got one prediction for the road. Jaron Duran snaps out of his slump in L.A. Maybe not the first game against Detmers, but piles up a few hits in L.A. I don't know if it turns his entire season around, but Southern California kid, I think he goes home, gets right, has a little bit of a get-right series, and that's one of my predictions, is that Duran has a good series out in L.A. and gives us a little bit of hope that he can turn it around. but not saying he turns around the rest of the season, but he's going to have a good series versus the Angels.
Anything from you, Jeremy?
It dawns on me that I don't know if I assume nobody, but did anybody make the All-Star team? I don't even know.
From the Red Sox?
Yeah.
There's got to be some starters. I would think Sonny Gray.
Do they still have the rule where every team has at least one representative?
I think ours is suspended right now for 7 games. So I don't know if he would make the team now.
The only person who would make it is probably Chad Tracy. He's closest to representing the Red Sox in the All-Star game. And not even his manager. He'll be like the third base coach. Jeremy, I don't. If that's true that we have to have a representative, I mean, I don't even know who's deserving.
Oh, it's revealed tomorrow or Saturday.
Maybe Chapman, because he had such a great start to the season. But even then, it's like I wouldn't put him in.
If it has to be one, it's probably one of our arms. I think Sonny Gray, 9-1 record, probably speaks for itself.
That's true.
Early and Toley, maybe not enough. Chapman's a little bit of a skid, but he actually should make it. And then offensively, honestly, Wilson may have gotten hurt here with that suspension. I don't know if that's costing him votes, but a long shot for us to make the to the All-Star team would probably be Sedan, Rafaela. Long shot, but potential bid if somebody gets hurt or can't make it. He could be a fill-in.
Let's just say they still have the rule where they have to have somebody from every team. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't have anybody. But
yeah, I think Matt's spot on. I wasn't even thinking about Sonny Gray. To me, if it's anyone that's the most deserving, if you're taking the whole season at face value, even including like Wilson Contreras, just for his antics alone and his bullshit of getting thrown out and just not being able to control himself, it should be Sonny Gray. I could even see if Whitlock didn't get hurt, he may have been a representative as well. He's been more consistent over the whole season than Aroldis Chapman. But to be honest, no Red Sox deserves to be in the All-Star break. They should, because none of them are All-Stars. Like, I think it's a stupid rule.
I mean, we just had to think really hard about reasons why they should make the All-Star team. So that says everything you need to know.
100%. Well, that's all we have for you tonight. We have been the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. For more well-written content, go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. We appreciate you all. Enjoy your 4th of July. Celebrate the 250th. Unfortunately, probably.